Bobby Cohen is back, and his show is Takeover Talk. And here is Bobby Cohen.
Thank you, Doug. It's another week of Takeover Talk. It is Monday, 2 p.m., and my name is Bobby Cohen. And again, like I said, I am your host of Takeover Talk. Our focus will be to assist you in acquiring the most current and comprehensive information on potential public takeover targets in the U.S. capital markets. Now, remember, I'm just guiding you to this information. You need to do your own due diligence before buying or selling any stock. M&A, as I always say, which is the acronym for mergers and acquisitions, is unpredictable, and it's usually not in the best interest to acquire stocks simply because rumors are percolating. You have to like it as a standalone company as well. Okay, let me start off by telling everybody that Merger Monday was a little quiet, I have to tell you. Usually there's one or two situations that may, that have occurred over the weekend. But, you know, my belief is it's kind of like the last week in the summer. People have already gone out to the Hamptons or to Martha's Vineyard or wherever rich investment bankers go to. So it's been a little quiet. So how I'd like to start the show off today, I'd like to circle back on a biotech company I mentioned as a potential takeover a few weeks ago. The name of the company is Portola Pharmaceuticals. I mentioned it when the stock was trading at around $37.50. Well, it's currently trading at $28. But what caught my eye the other day, and the reason for the mention, again, was a director of Portola Pharmaceutical stepped up to buy 390,000 shares of this biotech company. He stepped up to the buy window. He acquired the stock ranging anywhere from $25 to $26.95. The total cost to this director was approximately $10 million. That's right. You heard me correctly. $10 million. Not $1,000. Not $10,000. Not $100,000. Not even $1 million. He went for $10 million. Wow. To me, that says volumes. First, the company is on our radar screen as a potential takeover. And then we see a monster purchase by a director of the company. Now put that on your radar screen as well. Talk about having skin in the game. And usually, not always, but usually, directors of companies have an idea about the forward fundamentals of the companies that they sit on. Just saying, don't forget what I just told you about Portola Pharmaceuticals. PTLA. PTLA. Okay. Next, another company I discussed a couple weeks ago, and I want to mention today, is Diebold Nixdorf. That's right. DBD. Stock is currently up 7% today, trading at $4.90. As I mentioned a couple weeks ago, this company manufactures ATM machines. Back on August 13th, 2018, CNBC stated that Diebold had hired Credit Suisse and Evercore to look for potential buyers as it plans to sell itself. Back then, the company also said it was in constructive and productive talks with its lenders for future financial flexibility and expected to reach a resolution near term. Well, the reason for circling back on this name today is that I read a Seeking Alpha article today. And it stated that Diebold received a capital commitment from two institutional lenders. It also stated it's in the process of amending its existing credit agreement. The company expects to get $650 million from a newly established term loan, A1, due August 2022. Well, to me, this is my belief, this now allows Diebold to focus most of their attention on enhancing shareholder value by attempting to sell the company, as was mentioned back on August 13th. We'll keep you posted. Please keep in mind, this is a very risky situation and not for the faint of heart. That was Diebold, symbol DBD, in the news today. Okay. I'm Bobby Cohen. I am your host of Takeover Talk. Please call me. The dial-in number, get a pencil, piece of paper, is 1-888-627-6008. To speak to me is 1-888-627-6008. Okay. The first company I'd like to talk to my listeners to my listeners about today is a company called GW Pharmaceuticals. The ticker symbol is George Willie Paul Harry. The stock's trading at $147. The 52-week high is $164.76. The 52-week low is $96.42. There's been a lot of investment banking activity recently in the cannabis space, especially up in Canada, which is where it's legal. Okay? This company is a biotech company. They have a drug called Epidiolex, which is the first FDA-approved drug that contains a purified drug substance derived from marijuana. This drug is approved for the treatment of two rare forms of epilepsy. So I did a little homework. Now, I had to go back approximately 2 years ago. Reuters published a report that many drug makers had approached GW Pharmaceuticals. For a potential acquisition, it even stated that GW Pharmaceuticals had hired hired Morgan Stanley, the investment bank, for managing the proposals. Back then, both GW Pharmaceuticals and Morgan Stanley refused to comment, and the prospective buyers remained unidentified. Well, nothing came from those inquiries. Nothing. But we fast forward to now, and there is a lot more meat on the bone with its recent FDA approval. Just today, August 27th, 2018, Seeking Alpha. Again, I always make reference to Seeking Alpha, a very good website to get very good information, stated that GW Pharmaceuticals' epilepsy drug will be priced at $32,500 a year. Also mentioned was the brokerage firm Stifel Nicolaus' expected revenues. Listen to this. Could touch $1.5 billion by 2023. Wow. And by the way, Stifel Nicolaus, a very good brokerage firm that I just mentioned, has a 12-month price target of $211. Keep in mind, the stock is up a few points today, and it's trading at $147. Granted, the M&A talk has been relatively quiet recently on GW Pharmaceuticals. But at the end of the day, it's always about the fundamentals. And if certain companies might have liked to look at GW Pharmaceuticals as a potential takeover back then, they may just love to look at it now. That was GW Pharmaceuticals, symbol GWPH. Put that on your radar screen. As I always say, sharpen your pencil. Do some homework. Okay, if you'd like to speak to me and call in, the dial-in number is 1-888-627-6008. 1-888-627-6008. Please call in. I'd like to hear from you. It's not a cliche. I get my best ideas from other people. It's not a punchline. Please call in. Will you do that? On another note, how can you not like activist investors? I mention them as a catalyst when you're making when you're possibly making an investment in a public company. How could you not like activist investors? Carl Icahn. Third Point. Starboard. To just name a few. They do excellent due diligence. They do the heavy lifting for you. They're a serious catalyst. When an activist investor gets involved in public companies and wants to enhance shareholder value, those are three words I love to hear. Enhance shareholder value. Did you get that? Three words. Put that on your radar screen. Activist investors, check the box. That's good. Okay. Let me move on. The next company I'd like to discuss with you is called Dropbox. The symbol DBX. Stock is currently trading at $27.35. The 52-week high is $43.50. The 52-week low is $26.50. Just recently, on June 29th, 2018, an article written in the Banyan Hill website, Banyan Hill, stated, quote, "This cloud pioneer is now a takeover target. The company's platform allows individuals, teams, and organizations to create and share content online. It has been around since 2007, but only went public this March. Just before Dropbox went public, it announced a partnership with Salesforce." Yes, that's Salesforce. "This cozy relationship has sparked rumors that Salesforce could acquire Dropbox. The article mentioned that Salesforce already owns approximately 6.5% of Dropbox. But Salesforce isn't the only potential suitor," the article stated. In the article, it mentioned that Barclays Bank had speculated back in February that Apple Computer, that's correct, Apple Computer should buy Dropbox to push iCloud as a corporate competitor to services from Microsoft, Alphabet, and Box, Inc. The article ended by saying, on its own, Dropbox is a solid cloud company with an excellent privacy record and a loyal customer following. He continued to mention that the shares are currently a long-term buy on Dropbox's business model alone. His words, not mine. Add the fact someone is likely to buy out the company within the next year, and Dropbox stock could be the surprise profit generator your portfolio has been looking for. Again, his words, not mine. But very interesting if you are looking for a play in the cloud computing space. That was Dropbox. D-B-X. Okay. Well, here, my listeners, jot this number down. 1-888-627-6008. Give me a call. I'd like to know what you're thinking. Remember now, I'm just sharing information that I found on the internet with you, my listeners, in reference to potential takeover targets. Takeovers are alive and well. And also, I mentioned this last week. David Faber, the reporter from CNBC, always talks about activism. And I talked about that just a few minutes ago as a potential catalyst for a potential takeover. The usual suspects, I said, are the Carl Icahn, Third Point, Starboard, Elliott Management. There are many, many more. You could find these names by just going online and Googling activist investors to give you a head start of where you should look to do your due diligence. Sometimes it's that simple. I'm not saying it's easy, but sometimes it's that simple. Okay. The next company I'd like to speak to you about is Hibbett Sports. The symbol, HIBB. Stock is currently trading at $19.75. The 52-week high is $29.60. The 52-week low is $11.05. this company has over 1,000 retail stores nationwide that sell sporting goods. They also have an online presence as well. As just mentioned, in an August 26, 2018, Seeking Alpha article, it's not every day that one sees the stock of a profitable, highly liquid company take a significant hit of 30% or more, even when near-term guidance gets a haircut. That's right. The other day, it was down 30% in one day. This is what happened to Hibbett Sports this past Friday, following an earnings miss that sent shares back to December 2017 levels. Wow! This company's stock got crushed, taken out to the woodshed. So when the stock got destroyed, I did some homework to see if I could find any past articles on Hibbett Sports being mentioned as a potential takeover target. Well, I did. I found a Reuters article. Don't laugh. It was dated. Boy, was it dated. November 2010. Yes, almost 8 years ago. Crazy, crazy. Okay? The headline read, Dick's Sporting needs big buy as growth driver. Article back then mentioned that Dick's needed to make an acquisition, and Hibbert was a likely target. Well, that was then, and this is now, and a lot has probably changed. But if Hibbett gets any cheaper, maybe, just maybe, Dick's Sporting Goods or another competitor may just think Hibbett may be worthy of a potential takeover. We will see. Interesting situation. That was Hibbett Sports. We have a caller in right now. I'm going to go to Michael. Michael, it's Bobby. Takeover Talk. Thanks for calling, Michael.
Hey, Bobby. I just wanted to call in and let you know I work at a private equity fund in New York City. We make it a ritual to listen to you every week. Just wanted to let you know that we love you.
Oh, Michael. I love hearing that. I can only hope that I could find you guys and everyone else some diamonds in the rough. As you know, as I always say, Michael, nobody has a monopoly on a good idea, and especially a good potential takeover. Can you give me an idea? What type of stuff? What kind of stuff are you guys looking at? Anything in particular over and above making money? Because I know everyone loves to make money, Michael.
We look at every opportunity. Usually ones that people aren't talking about, some of the bigger players that, you know, that they talk about, the big guns, there's usually not much room to make money. The markup on them are ridiculous. So we usually find the smaller guys, you know, somewhere between the VC world and the high craziness of private equity. That's really, but in every sector possible. That's what we don't listen into here, because you don't go on one tangent, you're all over, which is great.
Yeah, that's a little of my ADD. I take that as a positive. Do some of the deals you look at, Mike, do they range from the millions to the billions? Are you in that type of space?
Yeah, we're usually about 25 million to probably about a quarter of a billion. That's the range we look at.
Okay, great. All right. Well, look, Mike, I appreciate you checking in and giving me those kind words. I'm here for you guys. I'm here for my listeners. I'm trying to, again, I feel like I have a machine gun, and I'm spitting out potential takeover targets. You know, takeovers, they're alive and well. But, you know, making money, as you know, because, you know, you're a crackerjack at what you do, making money is not easy. You got to do your homework.
Nope.
I try. Michael, am I right? I tell my listeners.
Everybody thinks on Wall Street that everybody makes millions of dollars. They look at the one day of the year, but you can make money one day and 364 days a year lose money. So it's not always as easy as everybody cracks it out to be.
Right. And at the end of the day, you got to sharpen your pencil, am I right? You probably have many research?
Absolutely. The competition out there is beyond what people understand. And for every, you know, 100 deals you look at, you might do one. So, you know, right. It's not like you get a deal and, oh, my God, you're making millions of dollars. You know, you waste a lot of time on research and you know, modeling and meeting with these companies that 99% of the time you never even get to the money stage. So
I appreciate that. But one last thing, if you could share with my listeners, how important is it to do your due diligence and not rely just on one source, how to confirm things and whatever and do your homework? That's, you know, if I could leave off this conversation with that, could you add to that, Michael?
The way I'll answer that, some of the best deals I've ever done are the ones on the surface you think are the worst. And some of the worst deals that I could have possibly done on the surface look like the best. So, you know, that's basically, you know, to get through all the BS in between, that's what it takes. So I 100% agree with you. You know,
okay.
Research is
all
everything.
Right. Well, 100%. You got to do your homework. Michael, I appreciate you calling in, and hopefully we'll hear from you over the next few weeks. And you have a great
Absolutely.
Week, okay?
You too. Have a great weekend, too.
Thank you. Okay. Boy, that was Michael. He's a private equity guy. Oh, boy. That was a breath of fresh air getting a phone call from Michael. Let me tell you, he understands the importance of doing due diligence. Doing your homework, sharpening your pencil. I can't verbalize it more. It's not easy making money. You heard Michael. And you're only as good as the people you surround yourself with. Michael works at a private equity /VC fund company that I believe he mentioned. And he has probably many people doing research for him. Okay? Wow. That was a tremendous call in, and I appreciate Michael calling in. Well, here, again, please call in. The dial-in number is 1-888-627-6008. The dial-in number to speak to me. I'm your host, Bobby Cohen from Takeover Talk. Is 1-888-627-6008. The next company I'd like to speak to you about is a pharmaceutical company called Agio Pharmaceuticals. The symbol is AGIO. The stock is currently trading at $76.82. The 52-week high is $99.82. The 52-week low is $51.62. This is a biotechnology company. This company received an FDA approval in August 2017 for treatment of acute myeloid leukemia. I don't know if I said that correctly, but the acronym, it's known as AML, Adam Mary Larry, with IDH2 mutation lending a huge boost to its immense commercial potential in the target market. In April, specifically April 13th, 2018, Zacks, another good place to get information and intel. A Zacks article, the author stated that Agios's pipeline also included a mid-stage genetic disease candidate, a consistent progress with its investigational candidate makes the company, Agios, one of the most lucrative takeover options for other large players in the drug/biotech space at the moment. That was his words. Makes the company one of the most lucrative takeover options for other large players in the drug/biotech space at the moment. So I digged a little bit deeper and found an April 8th, 2018 Reuters article headed Celgene hunts deals to offset loss of Revlimid patent protect. The article mentioned that Celgene, which is the very big, big pharmaceutical/biotech company that's a monster in the space of cancer treatment, was absolutely working on acquisitions to bring in more new medicines, and that investors were pressing it to do another deal after it announced the $9 billion takeover of Juno, a cancer cell therapy company, earlier this year. The writer said a potential target included Agios, which makes a drug for a type of leukemia. Also, keep in mind, Celgene already has a partnership deal with Agios. Wow, that's interesting. Very interesting. I would keep a close eye on Agios Pharmaceutical, symbol A-G-I-O. Do your homework on this one, okay? We're going to be keeping an eye on this horse. Okay, we have another caller. Oh, our good friend, Franco. Franco, thanks for calling.
How are you, Bobby?
Hey, Franco.
I always listen to your program.
Thank you, Franco. I always appreciate you calling in. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I have a particular stock that I'm interested on, and it has to do with marijuana. Is that okay to talk on the show?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I just mentioned early in the show, I spoke about that there's a lot of investment banking activity in the marijuana space, especially in Canada.
Yeah, especially now, because there's a good chance they're going to legalize that in New York. And I believe this is a New York company. It's called Axim, A-X-I-M. And I think they make a chewing gum with marijuana in it. And I think it's using right now for medical reasons, for people who need to have some intake of marijuana into their system.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I was wondering how is this stock going to be doing, because it was doing okay before.
Yeah, Franco.
Are you there?
Do you hear me, Franco? Do you hear me?
Yes, I could hear you, yes.
Okay, yeah. You're 100% correct. Marijuana companies, cannabis companies, especially in Canada, are front and center these days, especially with the legalization of marijuana in Canada and the medical approval of marijuana and cannabis in many states in the United States for medicinal purposes. I remember, and Franco, you correct me as I move forward here with Axim Biotechnologies. I noticed just now the stock is trading at around $2.45. It traded as high as $10. Yeah, it traded as high as $10.29 and as low as $1.70. So I see the stock is kind of close to its 52-week low. And I didn't remember that, to your point, Axsome has the potential treatment for irritable bowel syndrome as a chewing gum, correct? Isn't that what you said? As a chewing gum?
Right, yes. Okay. Yes, as far as I know, yes.
Okay, and the chewing gum, Franco, I believe is called Can-Chew, and I believe it's made from a cannabis oil or a byproduct. Am I close with that, Franco? Right. Am I close?
Right, right, yes, you're right, yes.
Okay. It's my belief that the potential treatment, that this potential treatment is in phase two. And, you know, as you know, to get approved by the FDA, you have to go through three stages, and then if the FDA likes it, then they'll approve it. So it's my understanding that this is their drug that is the most, ahead of that's in their pipeline with the FDA, but they don't have approval. But my sense is, Franco, that it could be a few more years before they go for a potential approval. Now, that doesn't mean that along the way, Franco, that, you know, these biotech companies, as you know, are extremely risky, but they also, you know, they announce top-line results and, you know, they try to disseminate news, good or bad, and, you know, you don't know if this company has, you know, has the goods, if this thing works. I can't even tell you where this thing could go. Obviously, if it doesn't work, you know, it could probably go well below its 52-week low. But at the end of the day, if this thing works over the next couple years or so, you know, the 52-week high, and it's my belief, which is just $10.29, could be a very, very low number. So that's just, you know, that's just kind of my, you know, with a broad brush, Franco, just kind of painting
right,
that one.
Right, okay.
How did I do? Did
you're
I
very
do okay?
You're very knowledgeable. You're very knowledgeable, Bobby, as usual. So I really appreciate all your input.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
So okay, have, Franco.
You know,
Franco.
I personally think it's a good investment right now, and we just have to wait. But we can't wait for the approval, because then the stock is going to go up the sky, you know. But I'm saying, if you want to risk, you know, a little something, it might be worth doing it.
No, Franco, you're 100% correct. Always the best time to buy these things is when no one is really looking at them. And, you know, just by 52-week high-low, at this moment, this second, it does look like, you know, at this moment, this second, you are, you know, the stock is trading closer to its 52-week low. And, again, if the fundamentals do work out and, you know, you've been listening to this show for many weeks, it's all about the fundamentals. And if the fundamentals are there, I can't even tell you where this stock may go. And I think you'd agree with me as well. But Franco, I appreciate you calling in and sharing Axsome with the listeners, by the way. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bobby. Talk to you next week. Take care.
Thank you, Franco. Okay.
Thank you.
That
Bye.
Was interesting. Thank you, Franco. Yeah, that was very interesting. I'm glad Franco called up and he mentioned Axsome Biotechnologies. It is extremely speculative. Franco even mentioned that. But, you know, it's probably worth putting it on your radar screen because it's in a very, very hot area these days. Like I mentioned to you when I spoke to you about GW Pharmaceuticals, which the difference is GW Pharmaceuticals already has an FDA-approved treatment. And, well, Yeah, I guess that's the reason why the stock's at $147. But at the end of the day, like I mentioned to you before, I mentioned to you ad nauseum every week, just like when Mike called and whatever, and he concurred with me, you got to do your due diligence. You got to do your homework. Okay? Well, that was Franco, and boy, I'm glad he called. And that was, he wanted to share Axiom Biotechnologies with all my listeners. Okay. The next company I'd like to speak to you about is called Coty Inc. That's the symbol COTY. Charlie, Oscar, Tom, Yellow. Coty Inc. is currently trading at $12.25. The 52-week high for Coty Inc. is $21.68. The 52-week low is $10.73. Coty Inc. is a cosmetic giant. But this past Tuesday, the company posted weaker than expected revenue for its fourth quarter. The stock got clocked and dropped approximately 10% in one day. At the time, the stock was trading very close to its 52-week low. So I did some homework. I found a brief mention dated November 11th, but I had to go back, guys. My listeners, I had to go back to November 11, 2016. I know that's almost 2 years ago, but you never know, right? On the website, thefly.com, it stated that in the French publication named Challenges, it reported, without naming its source, that the CEO of the French cosmetic group, L'Oreal, that is a mega, mega giant in the cosmetic space, would be interested in making a transformational acquisition and could potentially target Estee Lauder and guess who else? Coty, COTY. That's right, Coty, for a possible deal, said Deal Reporter, according to the contacts. Now, I just thought it was worth a look, considering the stock hit a 52-week low last week. Just put it on your radar screen, but please do your due diligence. This could be an interesting situation as a potential takeover. But again, sharpen your pencil and do some homework. Okay. We have another caller. We got John. John, it's Bobby. Thanks for calling.
Bobby, John from Jericho. How are you, my friend?
Oh, John. Thanks for calling, John. Happy Monday.
Yeah, well, you know, it's Monday. It's another day that ends in white. So listen, Tesla. Let's talk about Tesla. So now the CEO says he's going to keep the company public. Now, my situation is this. Leaving it public and his failure to meet production quota for the Tesla 3, does this leave him vulnerable to a merger and or takeover from a company that can produce electric cars, or is he going to lose his shirt and the stock is going to tank because he's not going to be able to produce the product that he says he can produce?
Well, John, I hate to be Switzerland and say all the above and check every box. Because we have, as you know, we have a fluid situation with this whole Tesla thing, especially with Elon Musk feeling that he could tweet at any moment, any second, similar to the President of the United States, but that's a whole different story, correct? But to your point, by the way, I do want to I want to just tip my hat off to you, because I believe last week you did call on Tesla, and I think you had reservations about anyone putting up money to take it private, and I think you did mention that, am I right? And you were target on. So,
well,
what I said was
that anybody who'd be willing to put up that kind of capital to a company who has failed to make production quota on the Tesla 3 and that is clearly in financial trouble and production trouble would be foolish to kind of raise that kind of nut, because Tesla and its electric car being far more financially gaining than its solar panels, if you're having production problems, you're not, your stock is worth nothing. But I'm glad that you remembered me for saying that.
Well, no, I mean, I was on the other side of your trade. I mean, maybe I was just more, you know, wishful thinking and whatever, because, I personally, I'm a fan of Elon Musk, and I'm rooting for him. Not that you were not rooting for him, but, you know, you just identified a couple of things that you thought were going to be an issue, and what had transpired was that he decided, for whatever reason, not to take it private. But getting back to your original question, again, if he hits, look, at the end of the day, John, and we had this conversation, I believe, last week, and I discussed this in nauseam every time, every week I'm on and take over talk. It's, you know, it's all about the fundamentals, and somebody needs to look at Tesla based on its as a standalone company. And I can't tell you if he's going to hit his, you know, his target, his goals for, you know, this model car. I don't know if anyone knows that yet. And it is speculative, because if by some chance, you know, business, you know, falls off the cliff, well, you know, gravity's a funny thing when it kicks in, and the stock price could probably, you know, go through the basement. But, you know, he has a big following, John. You know that. You know, it's almost like a cult-like atmosphere with people that, you know, that are behind Elon Musk and love his cars. I don't know if that's enough to get him to the promised land, to your point. But if the fundamentals...
Well, I'm going to be bold and go out on a limb like I did last week, and let's see if I could be two for two. I think with his production problem on his 3-series car, that Elon Musk, if he keeps this company public, has got to do one of two things. He's either A, got to purchase or take over a company that can mass produce the car better than he's doing. Otherwise, the stock is going to tank. Because if you can't meet production and you can't meet demand, then your shareholders aren't going to hold stock in what you say. Or B, he needs to retool his production to make his quota to keep his stock where it is. He's got to do one of the two things, because if he doesn't do one of those two things, there's no reason for anybody who believes in Elon Musk to keep stock in the company if it's not going to be able to produce what it says it's going to produce.
Well, I think what you're saying has a lot of credence, but... But, you know, water will seek its own level, and I guess we will find out. I don't know if we'll find out over the next few days or the next few weeks, but I think we'll have a much better idea probably going in on the next, you know, few months or whatever, to have a better idea of what their execution is going to look like, especially based on what you just said and whatever. But also keep in mind, you know, that what transpired, you know, maybe there's a positive what came about over the last few weeks, in that maybe Elon Musk finally is going to acquiesce and he's going to get some real help. To your point, somebody who could maybe help him execute better than he can. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from Elon Musk. The guy is, you know, he's a giant thinker. You know, he started PayPal. You know, he has the rocket company. But sometimes, you know, there's no nobility in not taking help, John, as you know. And I think Elon Musk needs help, especially from what I read. Do you agree with me on that?
I thoroughly agree with you. I mean, if you have a production issue, you have to reach out to somebody who can help you with that production issue. Because right now, if you look at Tesla the way I look at Tesla, and I look at his rockets, I look at his solar panels, I look at PayPal, and then I look at Tesla. Tesla, the car company, is his problem child, his goat, so to speak. It's what's costing him all of his money and all of his stock to drop. And he needs to reach out to somebody and say, listen, I need to overcome this production issue. How do I do it? There's no pride, no pride lost in asking for help. We all do it. And those of us who don't do it are the ones that suffer. And I believe that if Elon Musk doesn't rectify this production problem with Tesla 3, that it's going to cost him a lot of money and it's going to cost him a lot of favor with his cult following.
You ready? I on that note, I can't agree with you. I agree with you 1,000%. And again, like I mentioned before, and agreeing and concurring with you, there's no nobility in not asking for help. And I think Elon Musk, from what transpired over the last week or two and whatever, if there was a glimmer of hope, was that hopefully the board of directors, which as you know, has the fiduciary responsibility, will do their best to get Elon Musk some help so they could take collectively, not just Elon, but John, collectively, everybody, because there's no I in team. Am I right, John? Collectively, get this car company.
Well, I believe what you say. There is no I in team. The only problem is that Elon Musk sees the me in team, the ME, and it's all about me, me, me. But he's got to remember, he's got a board of directors, he's got shareholders, he's got other people he's got to take into consideration. And listen, I love the guy. I mean, the guy is an out-of-the-box thinker. He's a lot like you. He's a lot like me. And listen, I would love nothing better than to see him succeed. But he's got to pick up the phone and he's got to call for help because he's got himself into a position that it's going to cost him more than it's worth if he doesn't.
Oh, I totally agree with you. And for the record, you were kind, but I couldn't pack Elon Musk's lunch. But at the end of the day, if there's a red phone, Elon Musk needs to pick up that red phone and dial 911. And I don't mean 911 in a bad way. I just 911, and I need some help. Because to your point, it's okay to ask for help. And this project is so big. And this project could have legs with other things, autonomous this, solar panels, battery. So I think, there's a lot of moving parts going on here. And, there's a lot of dynamic in this whole situation. So the quicker that they can try to get Elon Musk some help and, in a constructive way, you know what I'm saying, not to kill his livelihood, because as you know, the last thing you want to do to an entrepreneur such as like a Steve Jobs or to a Bill Gates is to tie their hands behind their back. I'm not suggesting that, and I believe, John, you're not suggesting that, just that try to get him some extra help, because as you and I know, when we were in school, our parents used to say, Bobby, John, go for extra help. They give you the answers. I think Elon should ask for extra help, if I could use the same metaphor, John, because maybe he'll get the answers. What do you think about that, John?
Well, what I think about it is simply this. I don't believe that Elon Musk reaching out or his board of directors reaching out and asking for help from anybody is tying Elon Musk's hands behind his back. I think what it does is it helps Elon Musk preserve his integrity and his reputation and ultimately gets him to the promised land. Because right now, the only goat that Elon Musk has, and the only fly in the Musk ointment, is the production problems with Tesla 3. His SpaceX program, his PayPal program, his solar panel programs have been outstanding. They've been very lucrative. But when you look at the Tesla cars and you look at the lack of production for Tesla 3, you look at the problems that he had in the original Tesla 1 series where the cars were going on fire, got to overcome this production, because there's a lot of people out there who believe in him and who order his product. And I'll be one to say, while I don't own a Tesla, I like the fundamental concept of the vehicle. I like the greenness of it. I like everything about it. But I think he's just got to get over this hurdle. And I think once he gets over this hurdle, it will not only help preserve his legacy, but it will help his other branches of the company flourish, because you'll have that huge, huge capital income. Because I think once he really solves the production problem with Tesla 3 and moves on to, say, Tesla 4 and whatever else is coming down the road, that Elon Musk and Tesla are going to become so incredibly large. I mean, they could be the next trillion-dollar company.
I got you. John, I just want you to know, what you just said, I share your vision. My time is limited. I have to go, but this was a great dialogue. John, I appreciate you calling in. And let's stay on top of this Tesla situation, because it's a very fluid situation. John, thank you again, okay?
Bob, thank you, and I hope to talk to you next Monday.
Okay, great. That was John from Jericho. Okay, my time is up. Boy, an hour goes fast. Thank you, Doug. It's August 27th. And it was another live hour of Takeover Talk. If you need to get in contact with me, shoot me off an email at rcohen9074@aol.com. rcohen9074@aol.com. My name is Bobby Cohen, and this was Takeover Talk. See you next Monday. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.